It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a look at some of the most influential African Americans in Wisconsin today.
First, Democrats got into the debate game last night with the first round in a series of six presidential debates. Five candidates met in Las Vegas with CNN broadcasting the event. Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders have been the top two candidates in the polls. And while they did go back and forth a little bit, there were some friendly moments, too.
Let me say something that may not be great politics, but I think the secretary is right. And that is that the American people are sick and tired of hearing about your damn emails.
Thank you. Me too. Me too.
There were three other candidates there looking for a breakout moment last night, Jim Webb, Lincoln Chafee, and Martin O'Malley. And there was a lot of attention on a potential candidate not at the debate, Joe Biden.
You can weigh in with your reaction to the debate at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. David Friedlander joins us now. He's a political analyst and contributing editor to the Daily, contributing writer, to the Daily Beast. David, welcome back for another round of debate coverage.
Thanks for having me.
Well, there's a lot of attention and momentum going in and out of these debates. You tweeted earlier today, yesterday, Clinton in free fall, Biden set to pounce. Today, Clinton inevitable, Biden boxed out. Tomorrow, question marks. Do we overthink this momentum issue around debate time?
Yeah, I think we sort of political analysts have a tendency to sort of oversubscribe to the importance of the most recent thing that happened. If Joe Biden was going to run, certainly, I'm just skeptical that the sort of two-hour performance of Hillary Clinton last night would somehow talk him out of it. He was debating Bernie Sanders and Lincoln Chafee and Martin O'Malley and Jim Webb. I mean, you know, I think Biden must have known what was coming here.
Well, let's get into the email issue. We just heard that exchange with Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. This has been a problem for Hillary Clinton, especially in the polls. It seems like, how did this email issue go over in the debate?
Well, you know, it was interesting. I mean, as you say, she's been getting hammered by this, by Republicans. She's been really unable to get her message out about the policy she wants to enact as president because this whole email question is overwhelming everything. And, you know, Bernie Sanders really threw her a lifeline there and said, you know, essentially saying, we're a united Democratic Party. This is a sideshow of an issue. It's a ginned-up partisan issue. I'm with Hillary Clinton here. And I was wondering who would take that opportunity in the debate to do that, because it's a really gracious move. You're defending the front runner. And it was actually, I mean, he did say, you know, this isn't smart politics to do this. But in fact, I think it probably was smart politics to do it. And I think probably someone like Martin O'Malley was kicking himself that he didn't get a chance to defend Clinton on that matter.
Was there any thought that her opponents might try to use this as an issue to get some traction to take Hillary Clinton's leading campaign, if not inevitable campaign, down a few pegs?
Well, they could have, and I think you saw, you know, Chafee try to do that a little bit. But you know, the Clinton campaign has sort of cleverly parlayed this into being a simple partisan issue, simply something that has no merit and is ginned up by Republicans. And Republicans have sort of helped spread that narrative in a way, with Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy almost admitting as much earlier this month that they were doing these investigations to bring down her approval ratings. So, you know, I mean, it's possible someone could hit her on that, but this was a substantive debate. I mean, they were really arguing about the minutiae of policy details, and it didn't seem like there was a lot of room to get into these kind of, you know, personality-driven scandals.
Yeah, before we get into some of the issues that came up and the individual candidates, we saw huge viewing numbers for the Republican debates. Not quite as high in this debate, but as I understand it, record viewership for Democratic debates. People are into presidential politics this year. Is that what's going on?
Yeah, they really seem to be. I mean, I think it's heartening for people like me, and encouraging. But, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, without Donald Trump on stage, I think everyone was expecting this to just be a very limited, limited audience for this. It turned out it was 15 million people, which is half of, you know, what the Republicans were. But it's also magnitude more than even Obama and Hillary were doing during that long campaign, which captivated the nation in 2007, 2008. And I think some of it has to do with the fact that there really aren't very many debates this time around on the Democratic side. And so there's just a lot of interest on the few times these guys are going to be on stage.
talking to David Friedlander about last night's Democratic presidential debate. You can join in with your reactions at 800-642-1234. One of the issues that came up, and some difference of opinion here, gun control. Here's Hillary Clinton on that issue.
We have to look at the fact that we lose 90 people a day from gun violence. This has gone on too long, and it's time the entire country stood up against the NRA.
Different opinions from Bernie Sanders. Hillary Clinton went after him on this. Jim Webb, his take on that as well. So the gun issue, talk us through that.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I think one thing that came out in this debate was that, you know, Bernie Sanders, the Democratic Socialist from Vermont, is actually vulnerable on his left flank on a couple of issues. The big one is the gun one. And Hillary Clinton smartly went right after him on that issue. And Sanders really didn't have a defense for it. It seemed like he hadn't sort of thought through what he should say. Sanders, it should be noted, you know, doesn't have the sort of standard F rating from the NRA that many Democrats do. And he's actually, you know, been against gun control on some bills throughout his tenure. And he tried to defend himself by saying, well, I represent a rural state. These bills were complicated. And Hillary Clinton shot back, these weren't complicated bills when I was in the Senate.
Another issue, a lot of attention to economic inequality in this debate, the condition of middle and working class America. Let's give a listen to Bernie Sanders on that.
Do I consider myself part of the casino capitalist process by which so few have so much and so many have so little, by which Wall Street's greed and recklessness wreck this economy? No, I don't. I believe in a society where all people do well, not just a handful of billionaires.
So that's Bernie Sanders' main issue, it seems like. Did other candidates hold their own on making that appeal?
Oh, sure. I mean, that's the sort of central issue of the race right now, I think, is what to do about widening inequality, how to boost wages, how to grow the economy, you know, from the middle out. And Hillary addressed that, too, and you saw Martin O'Malley address that, and to some degree, I think you saw Chafee and Webb address that. I mean, it was interesting, that exchange. I mean, was preceded by a question about whether or not, you know, the candidates favored capitalism or socialism, which was, I thought, a little strange moment to be debating in a presidential forum in 2015. It seemed like something that you usually hear in a freshman dorm room or something. But it made for an interesting back and forth.
Let's go to a caller now at 800-642-1234. Mac is with us in Rice Lake. Mac, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I'd just like to mention the fact that the media coverage has been a little biased. The media, CNN, Fox News, they all put out polls online where they ask the viewers to vote. And on the CNN poll in particular, Bernie Sanders won 80% and then Hillary had 16. And yet, even though the poll was later removed, and even though he won, all the media coverage is saying that Hillary won and that she's ahead, and the debate won in her favor when all the fans and viewers think otherwise.
Mac, thanks a lot for the call. Mac is not the only one who's made that case, David, that the public, in some ways, some online polls supported Sanders more. They thought he came out better. Media saying this was Clinton's night. Where do you come down on that?
Well, I mean, I think a few things. I think for one thing, you know, online polls as a piece of data are useless. I mean, they're just however many people are online and see that website and click. It doesn't really tell us very much. You know, maybe you just have more of an engaged online fan base than the other people, but they would be easy to manipulate. That's one thing. I do think there is a disconnect between, you know, how the sort of experts are saying Hillary did and how, you know, people on the ground are saying Bernie Sanders did. But, you know, I think that one thing, this sort of notion of who quote-unquote won is really silly. I mean, it's not really, this is not a high school or college, you know, debating competition. The question is whether or not they improved their standing or diminished their standing, whether or not they did what they wanted to do or didn't do what they wanted to do in terms of reaching the voters that they wanted to reach. And I think it, beyond a doubt that Hillary Clinton did that. I mean, she was confident and fluent and knew the issues and funny. I think Bernie did that to a large degree as well. I mean, I think you could really see the appeal of Bernie Sanders, even if he got a little muddled on some issues. And I think the others probably, you know, didn't do that, frankly.
We'll get into some of those others in just a bit as we talk about last night's Democratic presidential debate. David Friedlander is with us. He's a political analyst and contributor to The Daily Beast.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What did you think of the debate? Do you have thoughts about winners or losers and the issues and how they were discussed, or maybe about the format? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We continue our conversation about last night's presidential debate with David Friedlander, contributing editor for The Daily Beast.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What did you think of last night's debate? A lot of the media saying Hillary Clinton did well, won, if you want to say winners or losers. Do you agree? Did anybody stand out for good or bad reasons? Were there issues you were glad came up, issues you wished had come up but didn't? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. And David, two candidates people are talking about, three that people haven't been. Did any of them stand out to the extent that they hoped to, maybe needed to, in that debate?
No, I mean, to borrow Hillary Clinton's line from last night, no, they really didn't. I mean, you know, it didn't even seem like it was worth it to have them be answering questions, I thought, at times. So one of them, Martin O'Malley, the governor of Maryland, highly regarded in many ways, many people thought would be a major contender, has a great resume, has really kind of struggled to break out of the pack. He's polling in the low single digits. He's sort of one of these guys who's right now kind of betwixt and between. He doesn't quite have the sort of ornery firepower of Bernie Sanders, but he's also, you know, doesn't have the broad party appeal of Hillary Clinton. And I think a lot of people were looking for him last night to really try to create a kind of breakout moment, and he just failed to do that. And you know, he's working hard, he's campaigning all over the country. Hard to see how he's able to stick around that much longer. And the other two candidates, you know, Jim Webb and Lincoln Chafee. I mean, I thought they didn't even really belong on the stage many times. I mean, both of them have almost no campaign apparatus. They've raised no money. They're really only barely campaigning. And it didn't seem like, you know, they had, maybe at times they may have had interesting things to say, but they weren't really, who cared? I mean, they weren't really mattering to this campaign.
Well, let's compare and contrast the presidential fields here. We have a huge cast of characters on the Republican side, a lot of them viewed within the party as legitimate contenders. The Democratic side, you've got Hillary Clinton, a front runner, Bernie Sanders, a strong challenger, and then the other three. Of those five I just said, two have held political office as non-Democrats, Bernie Sanders, independent, Lincoln Chafee as a Republican. So why aren't more big-name candidates out there? Is it just because a lot of people looked at this and said, I'm not going to run against Hillary Clinton this time around?
I think that's exactly what it is. I mean, I think that, you know, what we saw in 2008 when Obama knocked off Hillary Clinton is really pretty unusual for someone who the party is largely behind to end up losing the nomination. And so when she got a second chance, she's a path-breaking candidate, being the first woman, if she wins, to win the office. I think folks just thought that there was really no room. I mean, the you know, the sort of two wings of the party, Clinton wing and Obama wing, that we saw in 2008, if they're both behind Clinton this time around, what's the point of running here? So that's part of it. And you know, I think another part of it is that Democrats have lost so badly in the midterm elections of 2012, 2014. There aren't that many candidates you could even conceive of as being plausible nominees out there after Clinton.
Talking to David Friedlander about last night's Democratic presidential debate. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What did you think of the candidates? Do you wish Joe Biden had been on the stage or not? Let's get into some of the moments here in the campaign. I want to give a listen to Jim Webb now, answering a question. They'd ask a question to, who are you glad is your enemy?
I'd have to say the enemy soldier that threw the grenade that wounded me, but he's not around right now to talk to.
So Jim Webb didn't make a strong impression in the debate. That's a moment that's going to stand out as memorable. Have you seen anything like that in a debate before?
No, that was remarkable moment when one of the candidates, you know, sort of obliquely mentions killing someone on a battlefield with a smirk. I mean, I think you sort of heard the nervous laughter there, and I don't really quite know how to react to it even. I mean, it wasn't even really answering the question, right? I mean, the question was, who is the enemy that doesn't want to see you win office? And people were talking about Iran, the Republicans, you know, that kind of thing. And, yeah, I mean, that was just, that was a sort of remarkable moment.
Well, one thing I thought about that is there's an appetite, at least on the Republican side, for people who don't talk like politicians, and that, you know, Donald Trump and Ben Carson doing well in polls. Is there any of that kind of appetite on the Democratic side that isn't maybe satisfied by Bernie Sanders that might look for somebody who doesn't sound like everybody else?
I don't think there is. I mean, I think Bernie Sanders probably takes that up. I mean, you know, Jim Webb, you mentioned that Chafee was Republican. You know, Webb served in the Reagan administration, and he's sort of really running in a way to be the candidate of sort of the white working class male who's largely, frankly, abandoned the Democratic Party. And there just aren't that many of the constituency he's trying to appeal to left in the primary. So, you know, he may have been trying to do that, but I think it was a bit of a clanging note.
Let's key in on Martin O'Malley now. He pointed toward his record as mayor of Baltimore, governor of Maryland. Here's a bit about Baltimore, and there was some fact-checking challenging some of his claims in this exchange. Here he is.
We've saved over 1,000 lives in Baltimore in the last 15 years of people working together, and the vast majority of them were young and poor and black. It wasn't easy on any day, but we saved lives and we gave our city a better future, improving police and community relations every single day that I was in office.
So Martin O'Malley trying to draw on his record again as mayor, as governor. You know, if he doesn't make the case this time, do you think he's maybe getting his name out there for a future presidential run?
Well, I think he would like to do that. I mean, I think that was probably the idea. You know, he was a big Clinton supporter in 2008, and I think he thought, you know, if I just run a good race, a positive race, I finish a strong second place, I can still have a future in presidential politics. But the problem is that he's doing so poorly. You know, he's at 1 or 2% in the polls. I saw somewhere that he was at 3 or 4% in his home state of Maryland. But I think if you do so poorly your first time out, it's really hard to then make a case that you deserve a second chance. And so he's in a little bit of a desperate situation here, where on the one hand, he doesn't want to go full Bernie Sanders, because I think he thinks that would sort of hurt his chances down the road. He doesn't want to criticize Hillary Clinton because he knows that she's going to be the nominee. So he's in this box and he can't kind of figure his way out of it.
Well, the one voice we haven't checked out yet is Lincoln Chafee. Here he is talking about that whole label transition he's done over the years.
I have not changed on the issues. I was a liberal Republican, then I was an independent, and now I'm a proud Democrat, but I have not changed on the issues. And I open my record to scrutiny, whether it's on the environment, a woman's right to choose, gay marriage.
So one question that people are saying he didn't really address was why he's running for president, why he's running as a Democrat. Are people still puzzled by Lincoln Chafee on that stage?
Well, I mean, I think the reason Lincoln Chafee is running for president is because he gets to be on that stage. I mean, that's really the end-all, be-all of it. He's hardly running for president. I mean, he has, like I said, he has no campaign apparatus. He's scarcely campaigning. I think he's raised something like $30,000. I mean, this is a guy who did not run for re-election as governor of Rhode Island because he was overwhelmingly unpopular. He probably would have lost in the primary there. He was one of the most unpopular governors in the nation. You know, to turn around and then run for president after that, it's just a little far-fetched. And, you know, he's an afterthought in this whole race.
You mentioned earlier, David, a lot of focus on substantive issues, maybe not as confrontational as some of the Republican debates, and a lot of attention given to a lot of the candidates attacking Republicans specifically. So is this going to be mostly a nice primary campaign on the Democratic side?
I think it is. I mean, you know, the most aggressive one on the stage, right, was Hillary Clinton and how she went after Bernie Sanders. And I think that, you know, and part of that's because everyone sort of sees the writing on the wall here. I mean, it remains unlikely that any of these other candidates are going to be the nominee, and I think they want a united front against the Republican Party. I mean, it doesn't even seem, as we've been talking here, as if they're all necessarily running to win, right? I mean, you have Webb and Chafee, who seem to be just interested in getting their name out there. You have Bernie Sanders, who I think is probably more interested in kind of pulling the party to the left and getting his agenda some publicity. You have Martin O'Malley, who's kind of trying to set himself up for the future. So, you know, you have Hillary Clinton, and it doesn't make sense for there to be a lot of sniping back and forth.
Sometimes the the campaign opponents are maybe auditioning for a vice presidential slot. Do you see any possibility that it might happen, say, if Clinton is the ultimate winner, that she'd look to this pool for a VP?
I mean, I'm just not seeing it because I think that they just haven't impressed. I mean, you know, Sanders, I think the sort of socialist label would be disqualifying on a national stage politically for him. You know, I think Webb and Chafee they just don't have the credibility. You know, they're hardly even running. They weren't impressive in their campaign. They weren't impressive on stage. O'Malley would potentially be that guy, but he's kind of, you know, as he's tried to remain relevant, he's kind of sharpening his attacks on Clinton, which I think probably disqualify him for that role. But of that group, the only conceivable one, I think, would be O'Malley. But I doubt it will be him.
David, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
That's David Friedlander, contributing writer for The Daily Beast.
The news website Madison 365 is wrapping up a week-long series today. It's called Black Power, the 28 most influential African Americans in Wisconsin.
From politicians to business leaders, the series looks to highlight the African Americans who have shaped the state's recent history, economy, and culture, and who might shape the future of Wisconsin.
Harry Sanders joins us now to tell us more about the series. He's the publisher and CEO of Madison 365. Henry, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Henry, why did you want to have a sort of online meet and greet with some of Wisconsin's most influential African Americans?
Well, you know, I just traveling the state and talking to so many people in the community, it was clear that, one, the community was very disconnected from each other from a statewide perspective, and I also wanted people to be able to see people of color of all the different diverse things they're doing in their careers, and that there also can be a path to being successful, and that there are people who are doing things who are very influential in our community. So I just thought it was really important for everyone to be able to see that and have that in one place.
And it sounds like it might have been hard to come up with this list. How did you go about that selection process?
You know, it wasn't as hard as people would think. So part of it is I travel, like I said, I travel a lot in the state. But I, when I would go around the state, I would ask people, you know, who are the people I should meet with? Who are the people of African American, Latinos, et cetera? Who are the people in your community who are influencers? And then what happens is you start finding there's themes, right? All of a sudden, if you ask 10 people the question, all of a sudden out of those 10, they might say the same 5 names. And so over time, you start finding out that people had a really good perception of who these people were. And then you start digging into the background and kind of figuring out from there if they were really influential.
Now, one thing I noticed in one of your entries, and dovetails with something you just said here, you single out a woman named Celestine Jeffries from Green Bay.
Yeah.
And this is a lot of names a lot of people do know, but this is someone maybe a lot of people don't know in Wisconsin who's not from, you know, the major hubs of Madison or Milwaukee. And I love the line where you say, Celestine, we see you. We know you're not affiliated with the Packers. Let's get that off the table right now. Keep up the good work. Was that part of this to draw attention to non-Madison and Milwaukee people?
It really was. And if there was one thing I wish we could have done more is find more people outside of the Madison-Milwaukee hub. But the reality is that's where the majority of people of color are, too. So we had to deal with that. But you're exactly right. I wanted to make sure and highlight people from the state to let them know there are people in our state who are doing wonderful work, who are ingrained in those communities, who care about the same things you care about, who might not be highlighted, right? They might not be from Milwaukee or Madison. So Celestine is just a perfect example of someone. If you go to the Green Bay area, she knows the area so well. She's been ingrained in the political process. She's been in there from the private sector. So she was just someone who really knows the community. And I had to get her involved because I wanted people to see the Fox Valley, that Green Bay, Appleton, Oshkosh area. I wanted them to see that, hey, you know what? There's a lot going on there, too, people. And there's people of color there who are also being active. So I'm glad you liked it because you never know how that's going to play when you do it in writing.
Yeah, and are there other places like that, like the Fox Valley, that you wanted to draw attention to that weren't these major cities?
You know, I would have wanted to find more people in the Wausau area and probably the Eau Claire and La Crosse area. So there was probably some places there I would like to highlight more. But, again, this is the first time we're doing a list. We'll do this annually. And we'll have other lists that we're going to start doing monthly. And hopefully I can highlight those areas in different lists.
Well, let's talk about some of the other people you've highlighted and why you think we need to know about them. And let's start with the political field. Who are some of the politicians you featured, both at the state level and the local level?
Well, it depends how you define political, too. At the state level, we have Senator Lena Taylor. We highlighted her. Someone from Milwaukee, attorney, someone who's been really active in the Milwaukee area. You know, she's just someone who's kind of an activist and an advocate for people of color and a real champion for Milwaukee. So she's someone that we highlighted. At the county level, we highlighted Sheriff Clark from Milwaukee, Milwaukee County, someone who's been, you know, elected four different times, who really runs the biggest police force in the state. And then at the federal level, we highlighted Congressman Gwen Moore, who I love, and if she's such a terrific, successful story. And so we highlighted her from the Milwaukee area. So those are probably the three different people who first come to mind.
And with David Clark in Milwaukee County, you go on to say that there are a lot of people who say that he could have a further career in the conservative party going forward. So it's interesting to see all political stripes here.
You know, I got in trouble from that, too. So what's interesting is, which I love, this is the whole point of this site, is that some people were mad that we even put Sheriff Clark up there, right? And I think people were looking through a political lens, but our goal was to make sure that we show all people of color and the diversity we have within our community. And he's just a perfect example of the diversity within our community. And in that community, in his world, he has he's a conservative guy who has a following. And if you get elected four different times, and you're a sheriff, and you're a person of color, and you're talking about conservative things, you clearly have a opportunity to do bigger things if that's what you want to do.
And looking at another area here, you have on the list Boys and Girls Club leaders in both Madison and Milwaukee. Tell us about those two guys.
You know, Boys and Girls Club have such a awesome brand that it's most one of the most highly recognized brands like in the country. Then you add Michael Johnson and Vincent Lyle, and they're both different guys with different strengths but are doing such wonderful things for the community. And Vincent Lyle from Milwaukee, he used to work for M&I when it was M&I, and he was really known in the Milwaukee community, a hands-on guy. So when he went to the Boys and Girls Club, it was just a really good fit. And Michael Johnson from the Madison Boys and Girls Club moved to Madison about 5 years ago. The Boys and Girls Club was struggling. He came in and turned that organization around. They went from like 2 buildings to 7 buildings, and just a relentless fundraiser, and he's just everywhere at one time, it seems like. So, I mean, these are just people who really took that brand, that Boys and Girls brand, but didn't rest on that. They weren't content with that, and they really jumped in the community to take and leverage that brand to help all these kids. I know both of them. I'm just proud to know both of them.
We're talking right now with Henry Sanders of the website Madison365. He's written about the 28 most influential African Americans in Wisconsin, from business leaders to politicians and a lot of other fields.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Who are the African Americans that are making a difference in your community? What kind of work are they doing? Why does it stand out to you? And can you help Henry fill in those gaps he talked about? Eau Claire, La Crosse, Wausau. Local leaders in those communities love to hear about them. Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're talking right now with Henry Sanders of the website Madison365. They just wrapped up their series there profiling the 28 most influential African Americans in Wisconsin. We're learning more about the people who made that list.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Who are the African Americans that are making a difference in your community? That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. And we're going to go now to Michael joining us in Madison. Michael, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, thanks.
I just wanted to add that it would be great if the upcoming list of influential African Americans would include educators, both in the Madison Public School District and at UW-Madison, with the education gap that a lot of African American youth are facing in the city. It would be great to highlight some of the people who are helping to combat that gap.
Michael, appreciate that. And you do have some educators on the list, Henry. What do you say to that?
That's great, and I actually agree with them. The reason I didn't put more educators on the list is because one of our lists in the future are going to be addressing that, just that issue of teachers and from K through 12, but also in the college system, not just UW, but the other surrounding areas in Milwaukee, et cetera. So that's why we didn't highlight a lot of those folks on that list. So, Michael, that list is coming, my friend, and great idea.
All right. Well, appreciate that. You do have Dr. Jackie Daniels III and Dr. Darian Driver on your list. You want to tell us about them?
Yeah. So Darian from Milwaukee, she's a younger woman who seems to be very, very active. And she has, let's be honest. The Milwaukee public school system is not the best. And she's clearly jumped in and been very aggressive, but she's also been savvy about how she's reaching people, which I think is really, really smart, making sure that she's accessible and doing a lot of things on social media just to stay current and making sure that she can reach the parents and also the kids can know what's going on within the administration. And I think that's a big, big thing, right? If you're a parent or if you're a child, you really want to know what's going on with the administration, how they're making decisions. So she's someone who's impressive and young. I mean, young is all relative these days, but she's someone I think has a bright future.
And she won a 30 under 30 award or something like that.
40
under 40, right.
Right. Yeah, so she's keep your eye on her, but she has a tough job. I mean, that's the thing about it, being a superintendent of the Milwaukee school system, all the challenges they have that impact schools that she has no control over. So I admire her for wanting to do that job.
Let's go to a caller now. We've got Charlie joining us from Milwaukee. Charlie, hi.
Hi there. I'd like to put Gwen Moore on the list from Milwaukee. She's our congresswoman here, and I just really like what she's doing and what she's about. And, of course, she was on Colbert Report, so that was also very funny. But I just wanted to hear what he had to say about Gwen Moore. Thank you.
Great. Appreciate it, Charlie. And Gwen Moore is on the list. Henry, do you want to recap a little for Charlie?
Gwen is Congresswoman Moore is on the list. I know her well. I didn't know she was on the Colbert show. I'll have to look that up. Gwen is she's an amazing activist. She really fights for women. She's really about women's rights. And she is someone, if you know her and you're around her in Milwaukee, she's really down to earth. She's someone who's very humble, and she's always working for the community in Milwaukee. So she's one. I mean, I love Gwen. She has a heart to help people.
Well, thank you, Charlie. Appreciate you calling us. And Henry, on the other side of the aisle, Reggie Newsom is a member of Governor Walker's cabinet as head of the Department of Workforce Development. What can you tell us about him?
Reggie's a good guy, and he's running Workforce Development. Reggie's someone from the Milwaukee area who was well received in all parts of the community. Even though he's a Republican, people in the communities of color accept him as the Democratic circles and the Republican circles, and I think that says a lot about who he is as a person. And he's someone who really cares about getting people back to work. And I actually think, I didn't say this in the piece, but he has a really bright political future if that's what he decides to do. Because he really knows the state, and he has a passion for getting people to work, and I think that is what people are looking for. So he'd be a great political candidate in the future, too.
Now, the Black Lives Matter movement has been a force in this past more than a year, and you've included Brandi Grayson of Madison's Young, Gifted, and Black Coalition. Now, in your piece, you call her the disruptor of the year. Tell us a little bit more about why you included her this year.
You know, Brandi is a perfect example of how this list, if this list would have been last year, she probably wouldn't have been on the list, right? But this year, she's on the list just because a lot of people love her or don't like her, but they don't like the tactics, right? And what I like about Brandi as a whole, she has clearly made a difference about a lot of the underserved communities, and she's done it in bold and blazing ways. I mean, she stopped her and the YGB stopped traffic. They go to debates and yell at people like they went to a mayoral debate, and they started yelling at the people about Black Lives Matter. So I put Brandi on it because she's clearly influential. You know, you're talking about building a jail here, and she thought that that was something that was unfair and was really disproportionately focused on people of color, and they didn't build the jail because she brought this up. So, I mean, she does a lot of disruptive tactics, and that's why we call her disruptor, but it's working. So she clearly was someone that had to be on the list, and I also wanted our list to be showing people from the corporate place, but also people who are doing the work in the community. So she's someone that got on the list.
Go back to our phones now. We have Laura with us from Berlin. Laura, hi.
Hi. I'd like to mention an African-American woman in a very small community of Berlin, Wisconsin. Her name's Edie Reiser, and we all call her Coach. And she's the high school volleyball coach for the girls. And she'd be really embarrassed that I'm calling right now on her behalf. But she inspires not only the volleyball team, but the whole high school of 500-600 kids. And I think she's just made a big difference in the way our community views African Americans.
So Edie Reiser, was that the name?
Yeah, Coach.
Coach. Got it. All right. Well, thank you, Laura. So maybe someone for you to put in your back pocket for next time.
And where did she say she was from?
Berlin. I'm not sure.
Oh,
Laura, are you with us? Where is Berlin?
Yeah. Berlin. It's called Berlin.
Berlin.
Not Berlin.
I've heard of New Berlin.
Yeah, well, see, we're a small community, and there aren't very many African Americans in our community, and maybe five total. And we're just 30 miles west of Oshkosh.
Oh, okay.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Laura. Appreciate that.
You know, that's part of the reason I wanted to do this list, right? So everyone could see that the person like they're saying, Edie, would know that she's not alone. She might be the only one of the five people in that town, but she could see that there's other people in the state who are doing good work and that she's not alone. And also if people feel that they have great names of people they feel should be on this list next year, I mean, they can always email us and, you know, nominate those people, and we'd love to have those names.
Yeah, what's your email?
It would be at news, N-E-W-S, at madison365.org. And if people email me the names or people they want to nominate, please do so. I would love for people to do that. That helps us be able to reach and really identify more people.
News at madison365.org. Got it. Okay, well, thanks. Let's see. Maybe we've got time for one more really quick call. Mark in West Bend, you're up. Hi.
Hi, good morning or afternoon. Two names come to mind. One right away is Will Allen, the head of Growing Power. He's been such an incredible influence on the agricultural movement and sustainable use in agriculture around the state. And then Eric Vaughn, who is a voice that's been around for years, and the thing you just talked about, the show that he's the voice of, I forgot the name of the program in a second. Both of those are fantastic.
I appreciate your call, Mark. Henry?
Will Allen, I know Will Allen. Well, he's does a lot of farming internally. So Will Allen's actually a really good person. Who, you know, Will could have made, he could have been someone who could have been on the list. Will is someone, a good, really good person. I mean, a lot of people know him from his work statewide and nationally. So Will could have made the list. I'm not familiar with Eric Vaughn, so I would love to get to know more about him.
All right. Well, Henry, we'll be looking forward to that next list. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That was Henry Sanders, publisher and CEO of Madison 365. He joined us to talk about the recent list on that website of the most influential African Americans in Wisconsin.